Now, this could not be, did I understand that you were appointed in September of last year? And responsibilities as a trustee of a fairly large fund. If you had some introduction, I am not real familiar with the Mental Health Trust either, but if you had some experience and familiarity with the trustee part of the job. Thank you.
information to make the creators involved in the overall thing.
Thank you. statute. And we find, you know, people that clearly, very clear list of qualifications. Do you meet any of these qualifications? Have you been selected by the Bureau of Health Board, selected by the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education, selected by the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, selected by the Office of Pension and Aging, or any other health board?
I don't know where this is working. I do know that I received software that has made it happen. So if that is what I require, I don't know if it's the same, but that is what I require.
All right, thank you. And to be clear, the organized panel to a special team that make up of the panel that provides a list that the governor is to consider. And the appointees, I think that's an important thing to note, and we appreciate that these individuals may or may not be notified of the process. But I think that Bishop Ripple had a question.
Yes, thank you, Major Chair. I appreciate your putting your name forward and being willing to serve as capacity as a critical need, especially in service to our country. You mentioned something I appreciate or agree with. You're concerned about the significant increase in mental health needs in our state and country really, as a result of the COVID and the isolation and lockdowns. I guess when you said you're mentioning doing meetings or reading and stuff, and I've been pretty much proud of this because we're still, it's a recent, but have you seen any studies or research or is there research out that would indicate the likelihood of an increase in need associated with the lockdown isolation in terms of suicide and I guess the consequences of that? What are we looking at?
I can't really give you any advice. to rant and rant from mid-1980s about the good charters from the United States Army. I finally went home thinking of exactly good at education at Fort Greene without redemption. But then I spent all the time on that and I spent 2 years with my wife and we fell in love with a race. When we watched the Academy program, we had to believe a race that brought right on. We came back up soon as we were able and we have been making with our race for over 26 years since then.
Can you speak a bit to how you feel that will
reserve funds to replace our designated loan fund in certain parts of the state's budget.
Thank you. Thank you.
which could be used as part of the demo.
Thank you.
things is going to transform them. But if you, a moment ago, you noted out of the three primary abilities that are highlighted as necessary experience areas to serve on this board, and just a reminder, those are ability and financial management, investment in land management, board services, and beneficiaries of the trust. And you have specifically identified land management as an area of strength for you. Would you please provide a little background information on that and your experience in land management?
Thank you.
done with that from here?
No.
Okay, I think that's a really important distinction that we're trying to get at. Thank you.
Okay. I'm asking any additional questions. Ms. Boyles, thank you so much for your kind testimony.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Next, we have Mr. Brent Fisher. Mr. Fisher, are you on the line?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Brent Darrell Fisher. My wife and I have been married for 40 years, and we have 5 children, 16 grandchildren. I am the director of the U.S. Army Medical Service Corps, and started my career in the military after college. My degrees include a BA from Brigham Young University, with a double major in international relations and Portuguese, as well as a master's degree in business from the University of Texas at Austin, with specialties in international strategic and healthcare management. I'm board certified in both hospital and medical group management. I'm a Betty Markdale Fellow in both the American College of Healthcare Executives and the American College of Medical Practice Executives. My career has been primarily associated with healthcare. However, it includes a wide variety of organizations, including hospitals, both academic and community, large physician government groups, hospice care, engineering and manufacturing of medical devices and pharmaceuticals, software development, consulting, military medicine, private equity, and startup ventures. My writings have been published in numerous journals, trade magazines, and newspapers. I'm a big believer in giving back to my community. I've served on the board of directors of several professional associations, as well as on boards of civic, business, and religious organizations. I'm grateful for the opportunity the governor has given me to serve as a trustee for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
Thank you for stepping forward to serve on this commission. I think it's commendable that anyone should move that much more to it. And I guess my primary concern is the trustee function of the Mental Health Commission. And could you elaborate a little bit on what might bring to that function of the commission?
So that's what's meant by the chair, Representative Fox. As was mentioned in the mission of the trust, it operates primarily as a foundation. And I would like the responsibility both as a fiduciary trustee in the organizations as well as in academic endowments. And so with regard to management of trust funds or foundation funds, I have experience in that regard. I also started a foundation, a service foundation myself, that was responsible for looking at improving educational opportunities in the areas such as sleep medicine and sleep disorders. Representative Sokolsky, thank you very much for that question. I'm a big believer in telemedicine.
Certainly some things that are
through the program, through the trust fund that was provided to them in the organization. And one of the things that is very important to me is that as we talk about the expansion, the expanding needs of support and assistance in the mental health world, is that what we want to do is try to prevent, number one. And number two, we want to help people out of the problems that they've gotten into, the challenges that they've gotten into because of a mental health disorder. And so, one of the things that was presented and that the beneficiaries came and talked about how they were allowed with the grants to be able to start their own businesses. And therefore, why don't we bring in to their lives some of the meaning and value because they were providing goods and services to others by their work. And allow them to do things within their capabilities. Provide for themselves, at least partially in that way. But let's say something that's going to be provided by a Medicaid extension. We want to get people out of complete dependence. That part of the program adds more value to the beneficiaries. So I think we have to look at what Medicaid expansion does. What is it that can help beneficiaries the most? Is it a Medicaid expansion that provides certain kinds of services? Or is that going to be some of these non-profit programs that provide things outside of traditional healthcare that actually gets individuals with mental health challenges to become productive members of society.
I referred earlier that
programs that many nonprofit organizations provide to us for help.
Public testimony will be limited to 2 minutes from each individual.
is on our list today. We will do our very best, if the three of you are listening, to get through our entire list today. And if we fail to do so, we will reach back out to you and schedule a follow-up. Before we get started, as I did with the last couple of the February board, I would like to do the same thing, to give a brief overview of the State Medical Board, what it is like, who it's comprised of, and what their duties are. So, the governor shall appoint the Board of Medical Examiners to be viewed as the State Medical Board, consisting of five physicians, licensed in the state, and residing in as many separate geographical areas of the state as possible, one physician assistant, licensed, and two persons with no direct financial interest in the healthcare industry. Among other things, our duties include the examination and issuance of licenses to applicants, development of written guidelines to ensure the licensing requirements are not unreasonably burdensome, that after a hearing, they impose disciplinary sanctions on a person who violates the chapter of regulations or orders of the board, and then adopt regulations ensuring that renewal of licenses is contingent on proof of continued competency on the part of the licensee. We will first begin with Mr. David Boswell. Mr. Boswell, are you on the line?
Thank you, Chair Snyder. And all the members of the school committee. My name is David Boswell, and I have been married for 26 years. I have a family of 8 children. I have 7 sons and 1 daughter. I am the senior district of an Overmax Church of Christ in downtown Fairbanks for the past 16 and a half years. I've had the opportunity to volunteer in many capacities throughout those years, including with the Fairbanks School Bank, and singing with the Pathetiana Center and the Sunny Workroom. I volunteered in the hospice program here in Fairbanks. I've been a foster parent for 5 years. I have 9 different children during that time. I've actually adopted 4 of those children. I've been a past member of the Governor's Council for Disabilities and Special Education. I've been introduced to the opportunity to volunteer and serve on the Office of Medical Board as one of the public members. I have had many opportunities to utilize various medical facilities to help with this, being a foster parent, but being in that capacity in ways I have never imagined before. As you're all aware, we have not had the typical introduction to a state board, as we have found that my family was unique to the state of Alaska, a right to discrimination, and the world as a whole. Beginning last March, I have actively participated as the secretary of the medical board, and I was just asked at our last meeting to continue filling that role. I've had the opportunity over the course of these past months to meet with this board, perhaps more in the past year than any previous 4-year medical board was asked to meet. I began with weekly meetings in order to prepare for the impending necessity of formulating emergency regulations in order to meet the needs of the pandemic. I have been through some incredible trainings, and they were provided by medical board legal representatives as well as administrative staff over the past year. I've attended the Federation of State Medical Boards conferences via Zoom this past year. I've been introduced to the national issues facing other state medical boards. I have gained access to members' resources that I'll be able to utilize in the future, should similar issues need to be addressed in our state. Although I didn't realize the vast quantity of time that was being asked of us to volunteer when we began this position a year ago, I believe it was a worthy donation of time, attention, and energy, and I've grown incredibly throughout the past year, and so I have the opportunity to continue serving whether I hold out my time. Again, I'm David Boswell, and I would appreciate your support for serving on this important board. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Boswell. Do
you
have any questions for the
service. I'm not sure that you're at the beginning of the
sounds to me like you don't really have a lot of medical experience. Anything really this board is really about regulating the practice of medicine in the state of Alaska. Can you describe what motivated your interest in serving on this board?
Thank you. came out, we your assessment of do you think that they're off-base? Do you think there's some legitimate points? I mean, so would you support the ability of doctors to have dissent and different opinions on that? I think it was monolithic, but because the American Declaration is healthcare professionals and doctors that initiated it, but kind of signing on to it primarily. But my understanding is there's thousands, maybe tens of thousands of patients signed on to it at this point. What are your thoughts in terms of the treatment approach to COVID in a larger scale?
This is where we have secret opinions, and we're talking about the opinions, especially the medicine. And it's very good that we have that. As far as that goes, to me, there are always kernels of truth in the best opinion. But what I do is I try to believe those important things. As chairman of the state medical board, I try not to develop opinions or take too much stand because it just is I don't want that to get in the way of my ability to function. So I don't know whether that answers the question, except to say that there are powers and truth for everybody thinks, and I have to use that into a coherent in how I proceed.
Representative Spinal.
Yeah. Hi, Mr. Wayne. I'm just really looking at some materials and preparation for this discussion, and I noticed that you recently made a comment that I believe it was in a public forum in the assembly that met on February 10th of this year, which I wrote up soon, that the CDC had published vaccination problems and that there had been 501 deaths associated with the vaccine so far. Describe the context of that statement.
Sure. Firstly, I'm somebody who likes to tell stories. It's a very cultural thing. And so what I do is I have the line back, which I will make a perfect sentence. I will give an explanation, and then as a someone with a little journalistic training, I have what's called the kicker. And so I barely got through my perfect sentence when I was interrupted, and I didn't complete it. So actually, no one knew what I was going to say or what my name was. And so that is if I hadn't done that, you end up reading it in an article, which I think was problematic from a journalistic point of view, meaning that it just didn't follow journalistic standards. If they weren't, meaning that a journalist cannot complete my thoughts during that statement, they need to do follow-up examination. And they need to ask me what the context was before publishing.
Well,
Mr.
Chairman, I think everything that I was asking was to give me the opportunity to give a little bit more context if you wanted to, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely take context. It's an article in the newspaper which came from the vaccine database, which is supported by the FDA and the CDC. And what happens with this database is anyone from the public, one, can input any potential adverse effects that they may have from any vaccine, including COVID. And the other aspect is that anyone can search the database and ask it or query any problem. And somebody queried the database and came up with certain information. And one being hesitancy. And the answer to that is that unless the CDC and others would have a more consistent message, and therefore they may have more consistent understanding of the various needs for vaccination, etc. Because I'm sure most people would agree there's a lot of confusion out there. But the important thing is that my basic question is, if this was non-verified data on the various database, which is available to anybody, if anybody can pull this up, I'm sure you can look at it now. If there's so much confusion out there, why do they allow people to access it and draw their own conclusions? My point was that this just increases confusion in a time when people really need to, I'll just say, legitimately buy into the reasons that our leaders are giving them. And that was my point. I was just pointing out an article that here, this is out there, in one of them. As it turns out, in the database, the CDC has to review those deaths within 24 hours. So if that is their mandate, then why not hold back the ability to pull that information up before it's released to the general public? You know, as a physician, right here, when I'm talking about operating with somebody, I try to give solid information with good reasons. And that was the context. And I'm sorry it was taken out of context. But that's, I'll say that's right. But that was my purpose. To say, vaccine hesitancy is in part the responsibility of the leaders who are giving out this information. That's all. A lot of confusing data. I just wanted to say that, to make a statement that let's clean up some of the data. And I think things would be much better in the delivery of healthcare and of vaccine.
Thank you. I appreciate that response. I just wanted to give you a chance to address it because I thought that it sounded like an incomplete remedy that's really been a rather incomplete thought. And I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm not seeing any additional committee member questions. So, seeing none, that I would now like to open up public testimony for these appointees to the State Medical Board. But I'm not seeing anyone online for public testimony, so we'll close that. Okay. So, public testimony is now closed for State Medical Board appointees. And we will continue hearing from additional appointees in the coming days. I would like to thank everyone on the committee for a productive week of policy work and robust discussion. And if everyone has a wonderful Easter weekend, safe travels. The time is now 4:54. And this hearing on the House Health and Social Services Committee is now adjourned.